As you raise capital to start up a business, you need to realize that all the people you are approaching, the banks, the investors, they see you as very risky. And that's because the startup stage is the riskiest time of any business. And it's for reasons that I mentioned before. You are a new product on the market. You're a new player on the market. You don't yet have the customers. You're still trying to figure things out. You're still trying to get used to the distribution chain, to your suppliers. You have no experience in the market. That's very risky. That's very risky. So that's why most banks will not give loans to startup entrepreneurs, because you're too risky. And for a bank, they cannot afford to lose their money, because that money was paid in by depositors, and the depositors expect to get their money back. So when a bank gives you money, they expect to get it back. And the truth is, with a startup business, with a new and young business, the chances are high that you may not get back that money, because the startup stage is the riskiest stage for any business.
Every big thing starts small. It's a natural law. Every big multinational corporation was once a small business. Welcome to the Small Starter Business Podcast, a unique podcast for practical tips and advice to help you start, grow, or turn around your business.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Small Starter Business Podcast. I am your host, John Paul Iwoha. Today's episode is about capital, funding for business, and the three main types of capital you need to build a business. Now, funding is one of the thorny issues that entrepreneurs face. Whether you're trying to start a business or grow a business or turn around a business, there's always going to be a need for capital. You're always going to need money to transform your ideas, your plans, your strategies into real life, right? But then not all types of capital are the same. Essentially, the stages of capital you need to raise will change as you move along your business journey, right? So, but the interesting thing is, I was looking at a report recently from CB Insights. It's a company that is renowned for carrying out a post-mortem on startups that don't make it, startups that die. And the stunning thing I found is that up to 40% of businesses that fail actually fail because they run out of capital. Can you imagine that? Almost half of businesses fail because they run out of capital. And it's not strange to understand why running out of capital can instantly kill a business, right? Because without capital, you almost cannot start most businesses. It will be difficult to run a business or to grow a business or to even expand the business, right? So, but the interesting thing is this, there are serious consequences for those businesses and the entrepreneurs behind them whose businesses have run out of capital. You know, for one, you've lost your dream. You can imagine the excitement and the passion you have when you have a bright business idea, only for you to start that business and then the business runs out of capital. So you've lost that dream, you're disappointed, you're embarrassed, you've lost the potential of that business. Maybe you thought it was an idea or a product or a service that could seriously impact the world or even change the world. But now that dream is lost. Another important factor that I wished we talked more about is the emotional distress that these entrepreneurs go through. There's a major psychological impact of losing something you've put your blood, sweat, and tears and money into, and then it doesn't work out. So then we're having rising rates of depression, clinical depression among entrepreneurs. You're under pressure to pay things like salaries, the bills are coming due, your business is running out of capital. I wish we talked more about those kinds of issues, but then we don't. But it is a serious consequence of those entrepreneurs who have businesses that run out of capital. And on top of that, we don't even talk about the disappointed customers. Some of these businesses that run out of capital actually had customers that were happy with their products or services. Now, those customers are going to be disappointed because the business no longer exists. Worse still are the employees, the people you hired to work with you in that business. Some of them left a previous job. Some of them came to work for you because they believed in your vision, in what you're trying to build. And right now, your business has crashed because it has run out of capital. Many of those employees will be out of a job. And in many countries, the job market is tight. It's getting more and more difficult to get good paying jobs. So the level of disappointment is on several different levels. You're disappointing your employees, you're disappointing your customers, the distributors and suppliers who did business with you, all sorts of things. So it's not surprising that the pressure of all these things lead to major emotional, mental, and psychological distress for the entrepreneurs who are involved. So I just wanted to mention this because this is why today's topic is important. If you understand the role that capital plays in your business and the kinds of capital, the types of capital you need to build a successful business, then you can avoid many of these adverse consequences. Because the truth is, the odds are not in your favor. 40% is a high number. 40% of businesses crash because they run out of capital. And interestingly, I didn't mention this to you, these figures are coming from the West, from the European markets, American markets. I can imagine that the numbers are worse in developing markets like in Africa, South America, and parts of Asia, right? I can imagine a lot more businesses, much more than 40%, actually crash because they run out of capital. So I implore you to pay very close attention to this episode. Some of the things I'm going to be talking about, you may see them as basic, but please do not take them for granted because you don't know when and how this knowledge you're about to get will help you. So let's look at the three types of capital you need to build a successful business. The first type is startup capital. This one is very straightforward, right? You have a business idea. You want to start the business. You need startup capital. That's exactly what it is. Startup capital is the money you need to transform your idea and your plans into a real business. Now, some businesses are more capital intensive than others. For example, if you want to run a real estate business, you want to run a mining business, you want to go into pharmaceutical products production, you know, these are capital intensive businesses. So you will need more capital to start that kind of business compared to another kind of business that maybe doesn't really require so much capital. Things like maybe consulting or training or personal services, where the major thing you need to deliver is a skill you already have. So you don't really need a lot of capital. But those businesses that require a lot of physical infrastructure, whether it's an office, a warehouse, farmland, you need hardware like equipment, like machines. Those are the kinds of businesses that end up being much more capital intensive. Now, the thing about startup capital is that it's the capital that builds the foundation for your business, right? Any mistakes you make with your startup capital will likely follow you through the life of your business. Now, on the other side, at the startup stage, with startup capital, it's easy to fix and avoid some mistakes that may end up harming you later, right? So that brings me to the point of functionality versus emotional value. When some people want to start a business, they focus on the emotional value. For example, you're trying to start a business, you're not a tech company, right? Maybe you're into real estate or you're into hospitality, but you're investing far more money into a website. You want a cutting edge website. You want a next generation website with all the bells and the whistles. Now, the question is, what relevance is that to your business? Is it functional to your business or is it just good for your emotional value? Is it just good for you to point people to and say, you know, this is our website, something to make you proud, something you can brag about, something that will make people admire you? Now, in some fora recently, where I was speaking to a couple of people, I mentioned that there is a difference. You want to buy a car, right? You have several different options. You can buy a high performance car, like maybe a Ferrari or a Mercedes-Benz SLK, one of those high-end cars, right? Or you can also buy a Toyota, which is cheaper, much more economical, you know? But guess what? The Toyota has four wheels. The Ferrari has four wheels. The Toyota will take you from point A to point B. The Ferrari will take you from point A to point B. So guess what? The Toyota is functional. By functional, I mean it does its job. It can take you from point A to point B. The Ferrari is beyond functional. Apart from taking you from point A to point B, the Ferrari is much, much more expensive. And the reason it's that way is because it's for emotional value. Did you really need to buy a Ferrari? Now, the point I'm getting to is this. Some people make the mistake with startup capital to spend a lot of money on startup capital. They spend a lot on things that are not really functional to the business, right? When you're starting a business at the startup stage, the most important thing to you is to land your first few customers. That is the most important thing to you. And if your website will not help you do that, then it is just for emotional value. It's not functional. If getting office space in a prime location in your city will not help you land customers, then it's just for emotional value. It's not functional, right? So that's the mistake people make at the startup stage. They spend a lot of money on things that don't matter, on things that will not lead to sales or revenues, on things that will not really impact the bottom line. They spend it because they care about what others are going to say about them. They care about perception, about optics. It's all for emotional value. So I just thought I should mention that because it's a common mistake that businesses make. They spend most of their capital on all these unnecessary things, and then they find out they don't have any more money to run the actual business. You see, so they spent the money on all these things, and now the customers are coming. They need to make changes. They need to buy more stock. They need to upgrade certain things. They don't have the money anymore because they spent the money on that website, on that car, on things they didn't really need, things that were not functional, things that just had emotional value. So let's now look at one important question I often get when I'm talking about startup capital, and it is, what is the best type of startup capital? Should you get equity? Now, equity is when you take money from an investor and then you give them shares in your company. Or should you just focus exclusively on grants? Now, most people like grants because grants is free money. So most people like grants. Or should you take a loan from a bank? Should you do debt? The general rule of thumb is this. At the startup stage, if you can get grants, fine, because it's free money. Free money can hurt you, right? As long as it's truly free money. But the problem with free money is that everybody wants them. So there's a lot of competition for free money. Any grant opportunity that's posted, you can be sure that over 10,000 or 100,000 people are applying for that grant. And the higher the prize money, the more the interest. So the thing is, are you going to spend most of your time pursuing grants and looking for free money when you would rather devote that time to running your business? So there's nothing wrong with grants. The problem is sometimes they can be hard to get and they are very competitive. That then leaves you with equity. Now, what equity means is you take money from an investor. That investor could be your friend, a friend of a friend, a business partner, or even a formal investor. And in exchange, you give them shares in your company. The benefit of equity is that you don't have to pay money now. You know, so if you're going to hire somebody, a very talented programmer, a very talented front-end developer or full-stack developer, you don't have the money to pay that kind of person's salary. You see? So many startups do is they don't have the cash to pay, but they can pay you in equity. So what they say is, I need you to work for us for the next 2 to 3 years. And then in exchange, we'll give you 2.5% of the company or 5% of the company. It will vest over that time. You see? So that's one thing you can do. The benefit is that you don't need to pay any cash out of your pocket. And then you get that kind of quality person to work for you. Many big companies did it. Facebook did it. A lot of them did it. In the beginning, when they didn't have money, they had to trade equity, right? Now, the other option is debt, which is like the banks. And if there's anything you take away from this episode, this should be it, right? Taking out a loan to start a business is dangerous because a loan is not like equity. When the bank gives you money today, they expect that you start paying back the loan maybe starting next week or starting next month, right? And the thing about a loan is that you must pay back the loan. Whether your business succeeds or whether it doesn't succeed, you must pay back the money. That's very different from equity. Equity, you only pay back the money if the business succeeds. If the business doesn't succeed, there's nothing to pay. But for a loan, you must pay back whether you succeed or not, which is why it's dangerous because at the startup stage of your business, things are very risky. You've just started a new business. You're new to the industry. You just have a few customers. There are a lot of unknowns, a lot of uncertainties, a lot of things that can work against you. So you don't take out a loan when things are uncertain, you know, because that loan has to be paid back. The person who gave you the loan expects their money back with interest. So you don't take a loan when things are very uncertain. And I'm going to talk a bit more about the best time to take a loan for a business. So, but at the startup stage, equity and grants, very good if you can lay your hands on them. But except you have experience, except you've done that kind of business before, except you have contacts in that industry, except the uncertainties, the unknowns are limited, then you can take a loan. But if you're starting a business where all you have is optimism that things will work, but then you're still trying to figure things out and the odds are stacked against you, do not touch a loan at the startup level. Because what eventually happens is some businesses that run out of money because the capital they have is too expensive. They are spending a lot of money paying back the loan that the business is choking. The business cannot survive because you are taking out too much money from the business. At the startup stage, a business needs time and patience. So if you cannot get any capital that is patient, it's going to kill that business. And unfortunately, that's what happens to so many businesses that took out a loan to start that business. The pressure on the business becomes so much that the business runs out of money and then they don't have any option but to close down the business. So in that case, I will call it poisonous capital. You chose the wrong kind of capital, which is something that can also kill a business. And then the other thing I want to say about the startup of capital stage is that as you raise capital to start up a business, you need to realize that all the people you are approaching, the banks, the investors, they see you as very risky. And that's because the startup stage is the riskiest time of any business. And it's for reasons that I mentioned before. You are a new product on the market. You're a new player on the market. You don't yet have the customers. You're still trying to figure things out. You're still trying to get used to the distribution chain, to your suppliers. You have no experience in the market. That's very risky. That's very risky. So that's why most banks will not give loans to startup entrepreneurs, because you're too risky. And for a bank, they cannot afford to lose their money, because that money was paid in by depositors and the depositors expect to get their money back. So when a bank gives you money, they expect to get it back. And the truth is, with a startup business, with a new and young business, the chances are high that you may not get back that money, because the startup stage is the riskiest stage for any business. So startup capital, very important. It sets up the foundation for your business. If you take the wrong kind of capital, it could poison that business. You need patience at the startup stage, and you need to be able to calibrate the risk so that the kind of capital you're taking measures well with the kind of risk that person is taking. So that's the first type of capital you need to build a successful business. If you get the right kind of startup capital and you use it well, you focus on building a Toyota and not just getting a Ferrari, which is feel good, makes you look good and all that. You focus on functionality over emotional value. A next generation website is good. People are going to admire you. It's going to cost you a lot of money. But how does that influence your ability to get customers, which is the number one goal of any startup? Getting your first few customers. Now, the second kind of capital I want to talk about is working capital. Unfortunately, this can be the bad guy in the room. And it's often the bad guy because many entrepreneurs, shockingly enough, do not understand how important working capital is. So just to break it down, just to help you understand this, working capital is the money you need to actually run the business. So let's continue with our Toyota versus Ferrari analogy. You want to start a business. What should you start? Should you start as a Toyota or should you start as a Ferrari? A Toyota will get you from point A to B. A Ferrari will get you from point A to B. But the thing is, a Toyota costs less, far less than a Ferrari. So are you focusing on functionality versus emotional value? But then I hope you get the point. So let's imagine that you got the car, which is the startup capital. You got the car, you got the equipment, you got all those things, you hired your first few employees, you set up the business, you registered the company, you have your office, everything, the car is set. Now, what working capital is working capital is the fuel, is the petrol you need to run that car. So you can imagine you have a car, whether it's a Toyota or Ferrari, doesn't matter. But you don't have fuel, you don't have petrol in the tank of that car. Guess what? All you have is an artifact. That car cannot move because you need fuel to run the car. But guess what? The cost of fuel is much, 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 much lower than the cost of the car. But that fuel can mess you up. The moment you don't have fuel, that entire car you spent a lot of money paying for cannot move. That's exactly what working capital is. Working capital is the money you need to run the business. That's what you use to buy stock. You use to buy raw materials. You use it to pay rent. That is the money that pays salaries. That's the money you use to do advertising so you can get customers. It's the money you use for utilities, for electricity, for water and light and all those things. It's the money for logistics, right? So it's very important that when you have to build a business, you need to seriously consider that that car has to move. It's not enough to build a website. get the posh office in a solid part of town, get state-of-the-art equipment and all that. What if you don't have the lights? What if you don't have the money to pay salaries to the employees who actually operate those machines? What if your rent for the first year expires and you can't renew the rent? What if you can't do small advertising to get your name out there for people to know you? That's the thing about working capital. It's not a lot of money most times, but it can mess you up, right? And that's because cash is king. When it comes to working capital, it's all about cash, right? Do you have cash to pay salaries at the end of the month? That is working capital. Do you have cash to restock your shelves when your products run out, when your raw materials run out? That is working capital. Do you have money to pay for utilities, for electricity supply, for internet access? That is working capital. Sometimes it can mess you up. Now, there are two ways you can get working capital. And I strongly recommend you go with the first option, which is internal sources. Most of your working capital for a healthy business, most of the working capital comes from internal sources. And by internal sources, I mean your sales, your customers. That is the main source of cash coming into your business. And when I say sales, remember there are two types of sales. You can sell on credit or you can sell for cash. Working capital requires cash because you're not going to pay your employees. You're not going to pay salaries on credit. You pay salaries with cash. So if you are making enough sales, which is the first one, and you are collecting your cash from those sales, so you have more cash sales than credit sales, that means cash is coming into the business, which is the way a healthy business should be run. But for some kinds of businesses, the business is not generating enough cash internally. You now have to reach out to outside sources like an investor or most likely a bank. So most times you find out you're getting to the end of the month, you don't have enough cash to pay salaries. You can reach out and get a bridge loan or something, you know, that you can use to support the business until the end of the month. So you can pay salaries and stuff like that. So interestingly, like I mentioned, you can get your working capital normally should come from within the business. Working capital is usually affected by three main things, at least for those of us who are accountants, so we can make sense of this. Working capital is affected by your receivables. So how much of your sales are on credit versus cash? If you are selling more on credit than cash, your working capital is going to struggle. The second is payables, how you pay your suppliers, people who supply to your business. If you are paying your suppliers earlier than you should, your working capital is going to suffer. And let me give you a very interesting example. If you've ever tried to do business with any big company, any multinational company, big company, guess what? They never pay you exactly when you supply. Even if you supply them anything, supply them laptops, supply them paper, supply them diesel, they will tell you they will pay you after 30 days. Some of them pay after 45 or 60 days. In some industries, it can be as high as 90 days. So the thing is, why will these big companies, successful companies, why would they not pay their suppliers, many of whom are small businesses? Why don't they just pay them cash the moment they supply? They'll tell you that's not company policy, which of course is a big load of BS. They tell you it's a company policy and all that. Essentially, what it is this is how these companies manage their working capital. They don't pay suppliers immediately. They pay you after 30 days, after 45 days. And guess what? They are using your money to do business. And it's perfectly legal. It is a normal practice in business. Most people pay your invoice after some weeks or even a month. It is perfectly legal. So all I'm saying is, if these big companies can do it, maybe you should start to think of how you can handle this in your business. And one interesting way to do it is this. When it comes to small and mid-sized businesses, we are a cash-oriented sub-industry. We always like to do business based on cash. But guess what? Right now, one of your suppliers is only supplying you products worth $1,000. And the question is, why is your supplier only supplying you products worth $1,000? That's because that's how much you can pay. That's the amount of cash you have to pay your supplier, $1,000. What if you call that supplier to a meeting and you said, you know, right now we need more than this $1,000. But the reason why I cannot buy more than $1,000 is that I don't have cash to pay you. But we can do more business with you if you allow me to pay you after 7 days or 14 days or 30 days. I know you don't read human minds. No, I've not seen, I've been looking for, and if you find, please let me know. I really want to see such people who know how to read human minds. You cannot just assume that they're not going to agree. Because the thing is, when you do business on credit with your suppliers, you can buy more. You can instantly buy more. And this is a strategy that supermarkets use very well. In many parts of Africa, many supermarkets run on what is called the SOR model. It's called sale or return. So what the supermarket does is, for most of their suppliers, they don't pay their suppliers. They tell their suppliers, you can put your products on our shelves. We will only pay you when customers buy the product. So you see what the supermarket is doing. They are conserving their working capital. They are conserving their cash. By not paying for those products, they only pay the supplier when customers have bought the products from their shelves, which is a smart working capital management strategy. And that's something I need you to pay attention to. Another thing that can affect your working capital is your stock, your inventory. Many businesses make the mistake of tying down money. You tie down money in stock. So at the end of the month, you don't have cash to pay salaries, but your warehouse is full of products. What do you think is in the warehouse? That thing in the warehouse is your working capital. It's just that you cannot pay your employees with your products, but your working capital is tied down. So even in industries like automobiles, you know, even companies like Toyota, Ford, all of them, they do it. They call it just-in-time delivery. So they don't just stock up their warehouses with spare parts and raw materials. Their suppliers supply them 1 or 2 days or even some hours before they need the product. That way, the warehouse is empty. They don't tie down cash as stock or raw materials. So working capital management is even a specialty within the finance profession. There are people in big companies that are specifically hired to manage their working capital. And it's usually the relationship between your receivables and your payables and then your inventory, right? So without getting too technical, I just wanted to mention it there. The reason why I'm paying this much attention to working capital is, unfortunately, many entrepreneurs don't understand why it's important. But like I mentioned to you, this is the kind of capital that can embarrass a business and shut it down. So like I use that example, you have a beautiful car, either a Toyota or a Ferrari. You spent a lot of money on building this car, acquiring this car, which is your startup capital. You spent most of your startup capital getting this car. But guess what? You don't have money to buy fuel. You don't have money to buy petrol to run the car. So what is more embarrassing? That you have a car, but it doesn't run. It cannot serve customers. It is not functional. It cannot move from point A to B. Why? The engine is good. Everything. You spent a lot of money, your initial startup capital, building it up. But you don't have money to run this machine, right? So that's the thing. Now, when it comes to working capital, what flavor is best? Should it be equity? Should it be grants? Should it be debt? Again, there's nothing wrong with free money. Grants, if you can lay your hands on them, fine. But I already told you what I told you. It can be very competitive. It can be time consuming. Now, even having said that, we have people within our community that have done well with grants. And of course, there's a formula to it. If you know the formula, the secret to applying for grants and standing out from the competition, it's possible. We can have that conversation later when I talk about the insiders. But at any stage of your business, if you can get free money, it's fine. The problem is, it's difficult to get, very competitive, takes a lot of your time. And more importantly, the amount of money you can raise from grants is limited. Very few grants are above $100,000. Many of them are small money. $5,000, $10,000, $50,000, yeah? A couple of them are just above 100. And even those ones are very, very competitive. Now, so that's for grants. Equity, when you're talking about working capital, as you can imagine, compared to startup capital, working capital is a small amount of money. Even though it's small, it's still important nonetheless, right? So raising equity for working capital, raising equity because you want to pay salaries and stuff. So it's not as if you don't have the infrastructure to run the business. You have your equipment, you have other stuff, you have the space, you have the office, your website is running. You just need money to keep the lights on and run the business. The problem with raising equity for that kind of for working capital is that you'll be paying too much for equity, right? Equity is risk capital. That's why it's much more expensive, because you have to compensate the provider of the equity for the risk that they are taking. When it comes to working capital, there's really not much. You just need some oxygen to survive. So even though you can raise equity for working capital, it's usually not optimal because it is more expensive and it can be inconvenient to raise equity as working capital. Now, the best kind of capital for working capital is debt, is a loan. And this is why big companies love using banks for working capital. So they have things like working capital loans that they give businesses. Most times you will recognize it by the other name. They call them overdrafts or revolving loans. So these are loans that banks give to businesses to take care of their working capital needs, to buy raw materials, to buy stock, to pay salaries, to pay for sales and marketing, to pay for their utilities, to pay rent. You know, the banks like to give this kind of money because it is short-term capital. That's what working capital is. It is short-term capital. So banks know that the longer you give money to a business, the riskier it becomes. That's why many banks don't like to give startup capital, because startup capital is long-term capital. You have to give the money to the business, give the business time, be patient with it so that it can stand on its feet and then start to grow. That's quite a lot of time. Banks don't have that kind of patience. So that's why most banks prefer short-term capital, which is working capital. They give you the loan for 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, as long as it's less than 1 year. And then they call it a revolving loan because if you do well with the working capital loan and you pay back the interest, pay back everything, they will revolve the loan and give it, you know, allow you to access it. So that's what an overdraft means. An overdraft means that, for example, a company may have $100,000 in the account. This is an example. A company has $100,000 in the account. And now we're at the end of the month. They need to pay salaries. And the total salary, the total cost of their payroll comes to $150,000. But this company only has $100,000 in the account. That means they have a deficit of $50,000. So what an overdraft does, which is a short-term loan that banks give companies, is that they give you an overdraft limit. And when the company goes, the company can actually draw $150,000 from their bank account, even though all they really have there is $100,000. So this is the bank giving the company a loan of $50,000 to support their short-term needs. And guess what? By the next month, when the company starts getting money, maybe from sales, from their customers and all that, the bank would take back the $50,000 and the interest on the money. So it's very convenient for the banks, very convenient for the companies. So a lot of big companies do this. They run their businesses on working capital loans from banks. And this is how most banks make their money. It is not as risky as long-term capital, which they have to, maybe they are giving a loan to a business for 1, 3, 5 years. Those kinds of loans are risky because anything can happen in 3 years. But if you're giving somebody a loan for 2 months, 3 months, banks love that kind of business. So like I mentioned, working capital loans are less risky, especially when you're looking at it from the bank's perspective. And for many of the big names that you know, you will never know this because these are private arrangements they have with their banks. Many big companies have working capital loan arrangements with their bank. It's very normal. Banks, even if you're not asking, the banks will offer it to you because these are the kinds of loans that the banks love to give. They look at your transaction history on your bank statement. They see that the business has healthy sales and revenues. They see that you can pay back the money, and then they decide the credit limits to give you. So even if you don't have enough money in your bank account, as long as you're not exceeding your limits, the bank can allow you to take that money, and then you pay back the next month with interest. So I hope that makes a lot of sense. The third kind of capital I want to talk about is growth capital, right? So I talked about startup capital, which is the money you need to start a business. Working capital is the money you need to run the business after you started the business. Growth capital is the money you need to scale or expand your business and take it to the next level. So sometimes you start a business, you've been running this business for 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years. Your sales are more or less stuck at a level. Your business is doing well. You're paying your employees. You don't have any trouble. You're in a comfortable spot. But you're at that point where you realize, I can do better. I can be bigger than this. I can have more branches. I can be in more cities. I can be in more countries. I can have more products. I can serve more customers. You know, you start to think big. So that's the point where you're in a business. Things are rolling, but you're looking at next level. How do I get to the next level? That's where growth capital comes in, because you're thinking of more customers. And the moment you're thinking of more customers, you need to be thinking of more capacity, more space, more production capacity in terms of equipment, more employees to serve the more customers I'm expecting. So you're thinking in terms of more capacity. You need a larger capacity. Maybe you only have 12 employees right now. But if you're dreaming of serving more customers, you may be thinking of doubling or trebling your workforce, right? Are you also thinking of more market presence? Maybe sometimes you feel like you are the best product in the market that nobody knows. You're like the world's best kept secret. All your current customers are very happy with you. They're excited and all that. But it looks like, you know, you can do more. More people should know about you. More, you need more market presence. So you're thinking of next level stuff. That's where you need growth capital. Now, growth capital can come from two sources. In my experience, most businesses, and there is none that is better or worse than the other. It all depends on the circumstances of your business. So one source of growth capital can be from your internally generated funds. You can have cash reserves. So don't forget, your business didn't just start. You've been running this business for 3 years, 5 years, 7 years. The question is, what have you been doing with your profits? So are you the kind of person who you have profits this year and then you spend them living la vida loca? You're going on holidays. I'm not saying you shouldn't live the good life, but you need to realize that there's an opportunity for you to create a reserve of cash in your business. In those years that your business has done well, you need to be thinking of the next level in advance. So have you been setting some money aside? So for example, a company like Apple has one of the world's largest private reserves of a company, even though it's a public company, but Apple is renowned for the size of its cash reserves. I think it runs into hundreds of billions of dollars. So this is money from profits in previous years that Apple has been setting aside to grow their business. So one interesting thing you'll notice is you look at Apple's balance sheet and maybe you're not seeing a lot of debt. Apple doesn't need to take loans from banks because it has a mini bank inside it. It has a major reserve of cash because it has been stockpiling profits for a long time. Rather than pay investors dividends and all that, it's been stockpiling its cash. So what does Apple do with all that cash? Apple is always using it to acquire other companies. So they see a company that is doing well and they're like, okay, we can grow if we acquire this company. So they acquire the company and they spend the money in their cash reserves to acquire that company instead of taking a loan or getting more money from investors. So that's one way you can get growth capital. If you've been accumulating your reserves over time, you get to a point where you have a reasonable amount of cash that you can deploy to expand and grow your business as growth capital. Now, if you don't have cash reserves, there's also nothing wrong with that. Maybe you run a kind of business where your margins are really tight. Your profit margins are not, you know, that really good. So there's not much money or much cash to keep aside. There are such kinds of businesses. That means you have to go with the second option, which is inorganic growth capital. You have to raise money from outside. So you are reaching out to investors and you're saying, we've been in business for the last 3 years. These are our products. These are the number of customers we have. This is our sales performance. These are our margins. This is what our customers have been saying about us. These are the distributors we work with. These are the suppliers that work for us. So essentially what I'm doing is I am building a story of a track record. You are telling the investors that in the last 3 years, we have built a solid track record in terms of sales, in terms of validating our product, in terms of the market acceptance of our product, in terms of the size of our customer base. You're building a track record. And you can say something like, right now, we're turning over $50,000 a month. But then we believe there is an opportunity for us to step up to the next level. We need to get into this new product category, or we need to get into this other city where we have a sizable chunk of the kind of customers that we target. And if we can get that capital to grow, we can double our monthly revenues from $50,000 to $100,000. So you see, that's the story. What you're presenting to the investors is an opportunity to make money, because unlike a startup company, you are not risky. Your product is proven. You have real customers. You have real sales. You have real experience in the market. You have real relationships with suppliers and distributors. So you're not a risky bet compared to a startup. So that's why investors love to invest in growth companies. But the catch is, you need to do a pretty damn job of telling your story in terms of your track record. So you need to show where you are coming from and what the possibility is. That's exactly what startup capital is. Now, there's a side note I want to make here, which is that you need to be careful when it's time to grow the business, because like I always tell some of my members and clients, one of the most tragic times for a business to crash is in the growth stage. And I'll tell you why. You've been running your business for the last 3 years. You have 20 employees. You have a sizable number of customers. You have good sales. Everything is predictable and normal. You are in a comfortable spot, right? That's where some businesses are before they start to have aspirations of growth. But the moment you decide to grow because you want to get more customers, you have to stretch the business. You have to expand the business. You have to hire new people. And the thing about hiring new employees is that by the time it comes in, there are other implications, both in terms of culture. Human beings are social animals. Your business will become more complex to handle. Before, you had 3 people reporting to you. Now you have 7 people reporting to you. There are all sorts of complexities everywhere. And guess what? It's at that time that some businesses start to crash because they have not yet built a strong backbone for the extra weight they are taking on the front end. And for some businesses, they crash. They stop picking the phones. The quality of their service drops. The quality of their products drop. They start to delay all sorts of things because the business is now much more complex. So growth is not just about more customers, more sales, more products. No, growth is also about your backbone, your capacity, your employees, particularly your employees, your leadership style, the structure of your operations. If you don't get those things in order, unfortunately, growth can kill the business. Growth can kill the business. It's like you're taking on more load, more burden than you can actually handle. So when it comes to growth capital, what's the best kind of capital? Is it equity? Is it debt? Is it grants? Again, grants is free money. If you can find it, if you can touch it, good luck, right? Equity makes sense, right? Because you're trying to grow the company. You're trying to take it to another level, to a new level. That might be a good time to accept extra equity because guess what? Your growth and expansion will not happen in 1 month or 1 year. It will take time. So you need patient capital, which is why equity might be a good option, will be a really good option when you're looking for growth capital. Debt is an opportunity for you in growth capital because guess what? Even though you're asking for more money from the banks will want something called security, collateral. They want collateral. And as an established business, it's likely you already have some collateral. You have equipment, you have property, you even have cash. You have assets that you can pledge as collateral. That is an advantage you have that a startup doesn't have. And that's why most banks don't like to give startups money because they don't have any assets. They haven't built up any assets yet. So they can't pledge anything as collateral. But as a growing company, it's likely you've built up some assets. It's likely you've built up some transaction history. So they can look at the transaction history on your bank account and they can see the volume of sales and stuff you're doing. So you are an easier bet than a company that is just starting up and has zero sales, zero customers, right? That's one thing for debt there. So debt can be an option for growth capital. It all depends on how much money you're looking for, how long you need that money for, and the nature of risk in the growth you're trying to get into. So let me explain what I mean. If by growing, you mean for the last 3 years, we have had this very successful product, and we want to introduce that product to a new market, to a new city. We want to open up a branch in another city, but we'll be selling the same product we've been selling for 3 years. That's not as risky as when you say, we want to develop a new product. So a new product is riskier than a product that people have been buying for the last 3 years. It is known, it is tested, it is trusted. So you might be the same company, but your growth strategy can make you more risky or less risky. If it's a new product, it is more risky than your existing product. If it's a new market, it is more risky than your existing market. Because in your existing market, you already have experience, you have contacts, you have relationships, even with the regulations and all that. But in a new market, anything can surprise you. But again, that's another topic. I just thought I should mention that. So for growth capital, large amounts of money may be required. And I already mentioned to you some of the factors you need to look at. So at this point in the episode, let's recap. I started this episode by talking to you about the importance of capital in a business. The implications of running out of capital or not raising enough capital are very dire. Apart from financial consequences and losses, the emotional distress in terms of your lost dreams. You put in blood, sweat, and tears into this business and it has crashed. The people you're going to disappoint, your customers, your employees, people who believed in your vision and now they are out of a job, right? So the implications are just so much that you cannot avoid this topic. You cannot afford not to understand capital and the relevance and importance in your business, which is why I decided to talk about the three types of capital today. I started by talking about startup capital. That's the money you need to start the business. And then I talked about working capital, which is the money you need to actually run the business. It's a lesser known, it's a less popular type of capital because most entrepreneurs who want to raise money will say they're looking for big money to start their business or grow their business. Very few people pay attention to working capital. And yes, I understand it's a smaller amount of capital, but like I said, it can mess you up because working capital is like the fuel you need to run the car. You may have spent a lot of startup capital building up that car. But a car that can't run, a car that doesn't operate, it is worse than a bicycle. Because a bicycle can move, but a car with all the flashy gadgets and all that, without fuel, you cannot move. So, and then I talked about growth capital, which is the kind of capital you need to scale your business, expand it, and take it to the next level. So at this point in the episode, let's talk about our partners, Quezza. Quezza is an interesting platform that is doing something remarkable for small and medium-sized businesses on the African continent. Imagine you are selling a product that people want in your locality. It could be honey, it could be cocoa butter, it could be crafted leather work, right? And you're in Ghana, you're in the Ivory Coast, you're in Nigeria. These days, you're limited to your local market. You're limited to your local city. What Quezza does is, Quezza helps you find customers outside your country. So you can be selling shea butter in Nigeria. You can find customers in South Africa who can pay you more for your shea butter. And on top of that, they will pay you in foreign exchange. So that's exactly what Quezza is doing for small and mid-sized businesses on the African continent. It's helping people find customers in other African countries and better still in Western countries, in the Middle East, in Asia. So we're starting to see people export honey from Cameroon to Canada, to the US. People are exporting shea butter to Kuwait, you know. So I see Quezza as doing something similar to what Alibaba did for the Chinese SME category, where Alibaba opened the doors for small and medium-sized businesses in China to find customers outside of China. And today, almost everybody uses Chinese-made products. I see a similar future for Africa. And I see companies like Quezza leading that charge, opening that door for small and medium-sized companies on the African continent to find customers outside, earn in foreign exchange, increase inter-African trade, and grow our economies. So to check out, if you sell a product, you're interested in finding customers beyond your immediate locality, go to your app store. If you are on the Apple device, on the iOS platform, or your Google Play Store, and search for Quezza Seller. Quezza is Kuuezza, Kuuezza Seller. You go there, download the app, and check it out. We already have a couple of our members, you know, who are doing amazing stuff on Quezza. Quezza has opened doors for them. They are now servicing markets outside of their country, both within Africa and outside of Africa. This is an opportunity you cannot afford to miss. And if you're looking to explore opportunities to buy products that are outside of your country, or you want to explore and see what is possible, there are a lot of interesting things you're going to find on Quezza. But there's a separate app for people who want to search and buy stuff through the platform. Go to your app store, your Play Store, and search for Quezza User. Quezza, again, is Kuuezza. So at this point in the episode, there are four things I need to talk to you about. The first is the Insiders Program. I work with an exclusive community of entrepreneurs who are starting, growing, and building their businesses. And the knowledge you learned in today's episode is the consequence of conversations within that group, people asking me questions. And these are some of the insights you can learn by working with other entrepreneurs who are just as ambitious as you are, who are just as passionate as you are, who are just as excited as you are in building their businesses. So there you can get training, you're able to network, you can collaborate in terms of ideas. The owner of Quezza, for example, is a member of our insiders. So there are a lot of opportunities you can get by working with like-minded people, people who are entrepreneurs, and also build your business. So to learn more about the insiders, Check us out at smallstarter.com/insiders. It is smallstarter.com/insiders. The second thing I want you to do is to tell your friends about this podcast. This is high-grade business information. On top of that, it is free, absolutely free. So if I'm giving this to you for free, all I ask in return is that you tell other people about the Small Starter Business Podcast. The Small Starter Business Podcast, they can search for it on Google. We already have a backlog of over 70 episodes. We talk about things that range from sales to business opportunities to handling employees to strategy, market entry, how to raise capital, all sorts of interesting issues and problems and challenges that entrepreneurs face. And one of the big reasons we're doing this at Small Starter is that to grow the African continent, to take Africa to the next level, we need more people who know how to create jobs than people who are actually looking for jobs. So it pains me every time you see smart people, young people, well-educated people, all they have is a paper that says, employ me. But then jobs don't just fall out of the sky. Somebody has to create those jobs. And unless you haven't noticed, governments are terrible at creating jobs. They are not efficient. They are not focused on problem solving. And many governments, many politicians are not creative. The people who can create jobs are entrepreneurs. They're the ones who have the incentive, the motivation, the passion, and the skills and the talent to create jobs. So those are the people we want to empower. Those are the people we are focusing on. And what I believe is if you can get quality information like you're getting from this podcast, you apply it in your business, you see results, your business grows. Guess what? You don't have any option. You're going to want to hire more people because it's impossible for you to grow without people helping you. So that's how jobs are created. Jobs are created because entrepreneurs need help. And entrepreneurs only need help when they are carrying something that is looking bigger than them. That is why I want your business to succeed. Because when your business succeeds, you're going to have an interesting problem. You will need people to help you. And then you start looking to hire people. And when you hire people, they can earn a salary. They can have a decent life. They can become responsible members of society. And when it comes time to vote, these people can be much more intelligent. They're not the ones who go and beg for rice and money from politicians. Self-actualization, getting financial independence, for me, is the key to even solving many of the other problems that we have. You cannot vote or elect the kind of leaders that Africa needs. When most people are poor and are looking for the next meal, what it means is that a politician can throw bread in the air or rice in the air, and then those people will sell their votes for nothing. But when you have a business or you're earning income, you're a respectable person, you know, you're going to be asking some very important questions from these politicians. How are you going to solve the electricity problem? How will you fix our roads? What are you going to do about taxes? What incentives can you provide for small businesses so that we can be more successful? How can you help to introduce us to foreign markets? How can you improve exports? Nobody is asking these questions because people are just looking for the next meal. So this is a critical role that entrepreneurs are going to play in moving Africa and the world forward. They are the engines of job creation. They are the ones who are going to, they are the engines of problem solving. Entrepreneurs have a unique skill. They can solve problems in very efficient ways, and they are very motivated by challenges. So those are the kinds of people. They are the ones who have the right mindset that want to support. So if you're that kind of person, you're exactly the kind of person we're looking to support through the Small Starter Business Podcast. And I beg you, if you know more people like that, tell them about the Small Starter Business Podcast. Let them come here, learn, fetch from this well of knowledge for free, apply it in their businesses, and let us get this continent going. We have so many smart people, so many energetic people, so many hardworking people to be where we are, right? So we need to find a solution to that problem. And I think the solution is we need to empower our creative people to excel at building businesses. Because the more successful businesses we have, the more jobs we can create and the more wealth we can create. So I can go on about that for days on end. But then I just wanted to mention also that if you are happy with the quality of content you get on Small Starter, you want to give us a pat on the back, leave us a 5-star review. And you can do that at smallstarter.com/review. So a review will be nice for my ego, for my motivation and confidence. But the other thing the 5-star review does is it's going to pull more people to listen to this podcast because the algorithm on the podcast platforms they respect five-star reviews a lot. So when they see a five-star review, they're going to be like, okay, this is a good podcast. We think more people should listen to this, and they're going to send more people our way. So again, if you want to leave us a review, you can do that at smallstarter.com/review. And again, if you're looking for an opportunity to work closely with me, you want to belong to our private community, you have problems, any kinds of problems in your business, there's no point solving it alone, right? Two good heads are better than one. And in the insiders, we have far much more than two good heads. Until the very next episode, stay motivated. Don't stop being inspired by your problems. Like I always say, it's always good to have problems, because when you have problems, especially in business, they will put you to the task to find the solution. And the better you are at problem solving, it's like a muscle. You'll be building that muscle. Not every kind of problem is going to phase you, right? So we are in the business of problems, of problem solving. And you should never get tired of that. That's exactly what we do every single day at the office. Until the very next episode, take care of yourself and be safe. Cheers.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Small Starter Business Podcast. To take our free business courses or join one of our signature programs for special entrepreneurs like you, head over to smallstarter.com to join our private community. See you inside.